Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily Digest. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. Together we're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. Here's what we talked about this week.
Ben Olson's not here today. Instead, I have a guest, Christy Long. Christy, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You're here to tell a bit of a success story, and you already have an outline how you want to do it. So why don't you just go ahead and launch right in?
Sure. So I will preface this with, I wouldn't admit from the outright it was a success story. I think it was a happy accident success story. So maybe not anything to strive for at the outset, but still good to hear. So I actually started my LSAT studies kind of officially in January of 2021. I enrolled with the Seven Sage LSAT program because I had found that I really liked their analytics at the time, like the specifics with the different question types, all of that, which, as I've now learned, really doesn't matter. So I had signed up for that. And I'm also someone who works best with a deadline. So I went ahead and signed up for the June 2021 LSAT at the same time, which ended up being a mistake.
Yep.
So I started with that program. And I also had tried scouring the internet for all kinds of resources. So I ended up stumbling upon the Thinking LSAT podcast after looking at Spotify and started hearing you guys in February. So after hearing some of the immediate mentalities of just, hey, start the test, stop worrying about it, just get into studying, I took a cold diagnostic and got a 155, which, you know, nothing terrible, but I, of course, was not very impressed. So I immediately was very determined to try and improve that. So I, after doing that, throughout kind of the first half of 2021, I was very much haphazard with my studying. So it wasn't consistent. I didn't do my hour a day. I didn't always do reviews. I just kind of looked, found when I had time with work and kind of worked around that, which is also why I was getting inconsistent results. So realizing in May of 21 that I would not be ready for the June test, I ended up pushing it to August at first and then realizing that was still way too optimistic. So then I pushed it again until February of 22, which I ultimately did sit for. So I only had to push it twice. So at that point, around May or June, I realized I was not seeing the results that I thought I would with Seven Sage. And after listening to you guys daily with the podcast, going all the way back into the archives, I signed up for the LSAT Demon Premium. So not the live yet, just the premium one. And I loved it. I was so engrossed with the analytics and the algorithms and basically making sure that you were working to your own level rather than trying to just see what the hardest one you could do was. So once I started switching to the Demon Premium in about October of 21, I was doing about one or two tests a week and, you know, maybe a section or so a day. Okay. And that was when I started seeing my scores go up into the 160s, 170s. Yeah, I broke 170 in December of 21. So really only 2 months of studying, like not 2 months, but the two proper months of studying, I got between a 165, 175, almost every test. And so I took the February test going into it with a positive mindset because I had been scoring consistently in the range of about, I think at that point, every test I had was either between a 172 and a 176. So I was like, great, we can take the test. Unfortunately, I sat down and immediately had complete test anxiety because I was not prepared for the virtual proctor environment and how that would end up taking a toll on my mental state during the exam. Like, I vividly remember staring at the first reading comp section I got from the February exam and just rereading lines over and over because I'm like, I can't grasp this. I'm too distracted by the person that's possibly watching me right now. Like, I don't want tech issues. My internet might go out. So I did not have the right mindset. So I didn't do as well as I would have liked on the February exam. So I ended up getting a 162, which is obviously very, very solid. But again, I knew I could do better. So I had also unfortunately missed the March registration deadline by about a day. So I immediately signed up for April. And at this point, I switched plans from the Demon Premium to Demon Live so that I could make sure that I was consistently doing the same amount of work. And so that was where doing regular classes helped.
Okay, so Demon Premium has all of our resources except for the live classes. Premium has all the explanations, all the videos, all the questions, all the tests, all the analytics, the drilling, everything, the ask button, so you can get help that way. It has all that stuff, but it sounds like you went to live to get yourself a bit of commitment buy-in.
The nudge.
The nudge. How does that work? How did you experience that?
Yeah, so I ended up actually taking my Outlook calendar for work and I blocked an hour every single day from noon to one. And I just attended whatever class I could at that day, whether that was, you know, reading comprehension or something with games or regardless. And it was really just to make sure that every single day I put my best hour forward towards the LSAT.
Love that.
And I think that it was also nice to all have kind of a community of people available if I wanted to see like, hey, I'm sitting in this class and I don't really resonate with the explanation being given. Can I just ping someone and see if they can help? And every time that I had that encounter, it was one of my peers immediately came to my rescue, which was awesome.
Yeah, it's just amazing because I was never able to do that in the live classroom. In the live classroom, I knew there were smart people there, but you can't have the star in the class helping other students while you're trying to say something. But on Zoom, it's all miraculously possible. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't have to tell people to quiet down, please, because I'm trying to make a point. In fact, I do the exact opposite of that. Just encourage people to use that chat. I never would have imagined that that would happen, but the public chat and I'm sure there's private chat, tons of people helping each other in tons of ways on the Demon. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was very, very thankful for the live option and just doing that regularly and basically already having sat for one exam, I think kind of made the world of difference for my next sitting because I went into it. I worked out in the morning, getting my heart rate up after realizing that helps with your brain power, making sure that good breakfast, everything like that. And also going in with the mindset of, OK, my camera's going to be on. Someone may be watching me at any point. And lo and behold, I ended up having technicality complications with the April LSAT. As I know that you've heard of all of the horror stories, my proctor ended up just disappearing and I ended up having to wait between my last section for about an hour and a half for someone to come back online and like give me the password to go onto the section. But at that point, I was already like, I've crushed the first three sections. This last one's Logic Games, which is my favorite. This nothing can go wrong except for maybe my blood sugar is a little low because I'm hungry. But other than that, it was just very nice already having the confidence to perform my best, even amid any type of uncertainties.
Awesome. And it worked out.
And it worked out. I scored a 174, which looking back, if anything, I may be a little nitpicky and try and get a couple extra points if I have time. But
we don't call that nitpicky. I'm about to teach a class called Get Greedy on the LSAT. I mean, I'm encouraging people. 174 is great. 174 is also not the 75th percentile at Yale. So there are a lot of people who are doing better. So you shouldn't judge yourself. Rather, you should just say, well, OK, do I have practice test scores that are higher than that? Or do I think I could get practice test scores that are higher than that? And why not? If I do think, or if I know, if I look at my practice test record and I go, well, I've got 177s, 178s before, then I see no reason not to take it because law schools are only going to care about your highest score. And a lower score just doesn't matter. It doesn't change your highest score. Mm-hmm. So I see lots of upside and no downside.
That's true. That's where I'm still considering it. We'll see if I still have the mental interest in pushing back a few points after I finish all of the other application stuff. But
deadline is tomorrow to sign up for the October test.
Okay, that is great to know. So I won't miss it by a day.
Yeah, that's not tomorrow as you hear this recording, but tomorrow, September 1st, is the deadline to sign up for October. So if you are thinking about it, you gotta decide. But, you know, I don't think, Christy, for you, I don't think it would cost you a whole lot in terms of time or effort to prep. You've done it. Mm. You know that you're not starting over. You're just kind of staying sharp with all the things. You know how to play the game. You just have to kind of get out there and, you know, play a little bit. And then 6 weeks later, you take the test. And if you score higher, now you're a 177 instead of a 174. I wouldn't not get greedy if I were in your shoes. So ultimately for you to decide, of course. Starting diagnostic again?
155. So a jump of 19 points.
19 points so far. And
yes.
You know, we might have to update this if you do decide to get greedy and score a few points higher. What can I ask what your highest practice test score ever is right now?
I believe my highest test practice was a 178.
Yeah, I mean, I would be awful tempted to sit and take it again. You know what the experience is going to be like. It, you know, you could have Proctor U distractions again and it could suck and you could just say, OK, forget it. But it could go totally smoothly and you could get a really manageable test or one that's like just for whatever reason, it suits you. Mm-hmm. And you just kill all four games and you feel really good about the reading comp and the logical reasoning. And next thing you know, you've boosted your score yet again with very, very minimal downside and limited investment. Sorry, that's not the purpose to try to convince you.
No, but I appreciate it. And that's part of why I mentioned it was just because I'm like, I don't know. You are the expert. So I didn't know if it would make sense to still consider or if it really is just a wasted effort. But it sounds like it makes most sense to just sign up and see how it goes.
It sounds like a fairly clear yes to me. I mean, I can't think of why you wouldn't. You don't have to hold off applications or anything like that, because you know, if they evaluate you with your 174, great, that's awesome. But if they wait because they see that you're taking the LSAT again, they're going to know that you have a 174 and think you can score higher. So I don't see how that possibly hurts you.
Well, that's a very good point. I didn't realize they could see that I was registered and then consider.
So it varies school by school, and they sometimes have check boxes on their application, like, would you like us to hold your application? Although we just recently heard a story about them, one school just somehow, I guess, neglecting that checkbox. So someone had checked it and they then got a denial letter. And it was like, well, you have a score on record. We evaluated your application. And so that's the type of thing that you have to be careful about. But you wouldn't have to be careful about that because your 174 isn't going to get you insta denied like anywhere. That is great. What else did you run through your whole agenda, or do you have more stuff that you wanted to talk about?
That was my outline, at least. I wanted to make sure that I just remembered my specific story because, I mean, to be honest, I've even socialized the LSAT since like 2015 when I was an undergrad still, because I was like, I like exams and this one seems fun. So maybe I should just learn it. Like, I have my old GMAT book and an old LSAT book from 2015 just for that exact reason. And I distinctly remember being on vacation with my parents while I was in college, sitting at the pool somewhere and like doing the logic game where you have like four numbers and it's the one where you have to try and put it in the order of what they are. I think it's the like one of the free tests that you have on the LSAT, the Demon Free.
Yep.
I like distinctly remember that just being like, this is so much fun. And people looking at me like, who is this weird girl doing work on the pool side?
Yeah, but you were like a natural then for this test, because if you can treat it that way, if you can decide that it's a fun puzzle that you get to work on, and you know, how much different is this from maybe I like Sudoku, or maybe I like Wordle, or maybe I like other whatever strategy games. And it really is just kind of a strategy game that you can learn and you can get really good at. And it's fun to be good at it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. If anything, too, I think that the interesting part of like being super critical with the test is at the time when I was like prepping for my last couple of months, I was more commonly getting to the part where I hated all five answers. Yep. And I rarely, if ever, was debating between two good ones. It was always, okay, none of these make sense. Which one makes the closest amount of sense? And like trying to deduce that.
No, it's not. But then, yeah, you got to the point where you were like, well, there's not a second best answer. There's just kind of none of these answers.
They're all bad.
Like any of them. And yet you can figure out how to get that question right anyway, because you're like, well, you clearly didn't intend that to be correct. No, I cannot vouch for that. Nope. There's no way in hell I'm picking that. And then you find one where you're like, well, okay. I mean, maybe you meant this other thing. Oh, and then you can even get to the point where now it makes perfect sense, because you're like, well, I hated it the first time through, but I know one of these has to be right. And then when you look at it again, you go, oh, I just interpret this one word in this other way. And now it clicks 100% into focus. It makes perfect sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the answer. Mm-hmm. Next one. And that's a fun game too, right? It's just so satisfying to unlock. Yeah. How did you were just naturally like that? Or do you think that's something that can be cultivated?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it's definitely something that can be cultivated, because I think at first when I started studying, I did not have that right critical mentality. And I definitely remember my first couple of months studying, I was always kind of like, oh, well, this could make sense, or this could also be right. But you have to continue to tell yourself, no, this test was written by lawyers who want you to like get this wrong. You need to outsmart them and figure out what they actually mean and read the words and see what they're saying. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the biggest takeaway, is you just need to think critically.
That does not mean that it is a test of traps.
Oh, no. Correct.
I do not want people to hear that and go, oh, yeah, so it can't be that one because that one's too obvious. So it's got to be this other one that I don't understand. That leads to imposter syndrome errors all the time.
Yes.
The one that makes perfect sense, that's the answer. The majority of the questions are straightforward and easy. But then when you can't find an answer, or if you just actively don't dislike all five, then you do have to remember, oh, but one of them is definitely correct and it's on the page. And I just have to like, it's kind of like lowering your standards a little bit, but you only do that after you already passed on all five in the first place, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's definitely only for like the hardest of hardest questions, not any of the average ones by any means.
I was talking to a student today who helpfully was willing to volunteer in class, that they had, they go, well, yeah. So, I mean, that one was my runner up. And then this one, and I'm like, your runner up? Like, that was my runner up. And I was right that she had actually been doing the questions that way, like looking for a runner up.
Interesting.
Yeah. I had never heard that before, but it echoes some like terrible bullshit that I heard from, I think, Princeton Review or something, like, well, you don't have time to really figure it out. So what you do is you go through and get rid of the three worst ones and then decide between the two that are left. That is a terrible, terrible way of doing the test. And you need to be more like Christy and find that, like, well, it's either obviously this one, or I don't like any of the five, but I still know that it's this one because I figured it out.
Exactly.
Amazing. Who's that in your lap? We should have done this sooner.
Sparkles. So Sparkles is my 6-month-old teacup Pomeranian, who I got as a present to myself the Saturday after I took my April LSAT, because I knew I was going to, I knew I did well after, even before getting my score. And I've always wanted a puppy, and she's great.
How long have you had her?
I've had her now for about 4 months.
What is the puppy owning life like? Is it everything it's cracked up to be?
You know, it's a lot of responsibility. No, it's wonderful. If anything, it's great to have an excuse to get out of the house and get some more exercise in, get some steps.
Universal excuse to bail on any party early as well. You can always just say, got to go let the dog out.
Exactly. It's the best excuse I should have learned years ago.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on Sparkles, your LSAT dog. Congratulations on all of your improvement. Do you have any other tips that you would like to share for people who are trying to make the, you made the 19 point leap, might get more than that.
I think the biggest piece of advice I would have for anyone that's trying to navigate this journey is don't overthink your prep. So I went into it thinking I needed to learn contrapositives and all of the specific stupid jargon that helps LSAT teachers stay in business that aren't you guys. And I focus way too much on that rather than just getting to business and doing the test. And I think that that is exactly what people just need to do. And it's hard because lawyer type personalities don't like being bad at things. So you don't want to see scores in the 150s, low 160s after you've put in effort, but you just have to, because that's the only way you can get better.
Well, it's like practicing any sport. I mean, it's like shooting free throws. You're not going to read theory about shooting free throws. You're going to just go shoot damn free throws. And I'm not saying that the theory can't help, but you can't even understand the theory until you start shooting some free throws. And then maybe you could read up on various techniques or how high you're supposed to throw, optimal
the
launch
angles and the geometry of
whatever. But really, you can't do that until you're actually doing the act. Reading about it in theory is never going to work. And the same would go for, you know, riding a bike or playing golf or whatever. Like, you have to go out and bang range balls. Like, just, you're gonna look gross. You're not good at golf. But there's no point in, like trying to get good in your basement or something before you ever go to the driving range. You just go hit a bunch of shots and try to get better. So yeah, that's cool. That's a really useful tip. What else should people do? They should dive right in. They should start doing drilling, probably, huh? Some
drilling,
individual sections, time sections at some point.
Yes, all of the above. And also just making sure to stay sharp with your reading. I think that's also the biggest way that I felt complacent at times was, I've been reading my whole life. It's fine. But you haven't been reading the way that you need to be until you
What's the difference?
Understanding which details to care about and which ones to ignore. Or gloss over more so.
How do you do that?
By understanding the main point.
Just by understanding what you're reading, right?
Yes.
Like, yes, there are parts of the reading comprehension passage which they can't ask you a question on literally everything. There are parts that are meant to be just kind of like, well, here's a list of examples of those. And you do tune in to like, yeah, okay, I don't have to memorize that list.
Exactly.
But the only way to know what stuff is important and what stuff is not important is by understanding all of it. Mm-hmm. And then with some of it, you just kind of go, yeah, okay, that's that box of stuff over there. Here's how it relates to the main point. But I don't necessarily need to know all that detail.
Exactly. I think that's critical.
Christy, thank you very much for coming on the show. You're applying this cycle?
I am, yes. So working on stuff for that, getting my personal statement edited by Leslie, who is amazing. Highly recommend her.
Yep. Leslie Blodgett, a personal statement editor on staff at the Demon. She's awesome. If you do want to pay somebody for one-on-one help with your essays and, what you doing for the next year before starting law school?
So I will continue to work. So right now I am in a corporate strategy role, and I am going to continue to make money while I can, and hopefully get a couple of months off before starting school. But other than that, I think just kind of doing the same grind that I have been for the last couple of years.
Awesome.
We have an email here from Ryan.
Ryan says, "Hey, Demon team, thanks for the great program for learning the LSAT. I'm trying to stick to your philosophy of not paying for law school. I'm a splitter, that is a 3.6 UGPA and a 168 LSAT. My original goal was to crack into a T14 school while trying not to pay. My question is, at what point does a high LSAT score become a diminishing return with a splitter GPA? Meaning, will I ever have a chance at getting a full ride at a top school with my GPA under the 25th percentile at all the schools? I can currently get full rides at schools like Villanova, Wake Forest, SMU. Do you guys ever recommend splitter candidates that don't want to pay for law school stop taking the LSAT at a certain score, even if they feel they can get it higher? Thanks for your help, Ryan.
Well, if you're top 14 or bust, which, by the way, top 14 was a term coined by 14th ranked Georgetown.
Yeah.
If that's your goal, then maybe there is some diminishing returns if you want to go there and you want to go there for free, because you're not going to get in there with your 3.6. That said, if you go from a 168 to a 172, which is 4 points, I don't think that's unreasonable for most people who are already up that high. All of a sudden, you go from a situation where schools in the top 20 aren't giving you full rides to now a bunch are giving you full rides. And some of the money at these top 14 schools, well, maybe it was going from unlikely to now less than half, but that's still money on the table. So I don't think I would ever tell someone to stop.
Absolutely not. Not if you want to go to the elite schools. I mean, so I just went to LSATdemon.com/scholarships. I put in a 3.6 and a 180. And yeah, there's no green in the top 14, but there's a hell of a lot of green right outside the top 14, including UCLA, full ride, WashU in St. Louis, full ride, BU, full ride. So one, those are damn good schools that have, in very recent memory, been T14 schools. UCLA specifically was 14th like last year.
Yeah.
And they want to become 14th again. And so that's why they give these scholarships. I'm seeing more than half at all of the schools ranked 6th and higher. So all the way from Penn through Georgetown, I'm seeing more than half. And then it becomes a negotiation at that point. So if you really do ace the LSAT, get a full ride to UCLA, I got to think that Georgetown is going to have to kind of consider that. You know, you're like, hey, Georgetown, you literally got knocked out of the top 14 one year ago by UCLA. UCLA is about to give me and my 180 a scholarship. I'm not going to Georgetown if I have to pay for it. And the worst they could say at that point is no. I mean, you don't think Ryan's looking for like justification for stopping LSAT prep?
Kind of sounds like it.
Yeah. I'd like to think better of you, Ryan, because you're writing into the show, but you know, we have high hopes for all of our listeners and all of our students. We want you to go to the very best school you can go to for the very best price you can get. And with mediocre grades, you know, 3.6, I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than my grades were in undergrad, but 168's not going to impress any of these schools. And you think you can do better, you should absolutely keep prepping and do better. It will have meaningful differences to your scholarship offers. We have an email here from Chloe.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. I'm a Demon subscriber for almost a year. LSAT Demon really changed the way I study LSAT. I started to enjoy studying it, and I finally feel the, quote, click. 3 or 4 years on and off? Okay. I started with a 135 cold diagnostic test, and now I'm at a 162.
Wow.
Okay. Because I listened to the Thinking LSAT, I don't want to pay for law school, so I will continue studying until I get a 170 plus. That's okay. In the meantime, I found a WFH job as a paralegal. Do you know what WFH means?
Work from home.
Work from home. Okay, got it. I'm lucky to have this. That's the only thing I know. I don't know any other jobs. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Me too.
I guess I haven't ever used that before. I am lucky to have this job because my law firm is very supportive. They promoted me 3 times in 5 months. I'm in my early 30s. I have a coworker who is a Loyola TUEL. He told me that he will have $250,000 in student loan debt after he graduates. Wait, what? That he will? After he graduates from law school. This makes me want to get a 179 LSAT before even thinking about law school, LOL. Okay, well, you're LOLing that statement, so you must know that you don't need that, but certainly will help. I found that there is a lawyer apprenticeship program in California. I'm not sure if either of you knows this program. Basically, if the person works with a lawyer for 4 years, 18 hours minimum per week, and if the person passes the bar, the baby bar, and the California bar exam, the person can be a lawyer without going to law school. Yeah, that's what Kim Kardashian was trying to do, right? I think. What do you think about this program? Do you think it's worth it if my attorney offers to help me? Thank you for all of your advice. I think the biggest downside with that program is that you're then, limited to California, right? You can't practice anywhere else?
The biggest downside with that program is that I just don't think it's a thing that people ever actually really end up doing. Like, I know that it exists, and people have been telling me about it for my whole 15 years of doing LSAT.
Yeah.
I just don't know anybody who's ever actually done it. So if your work wants to sponsor you to do this, especially if your work wants to like pay for law school for you, and if they really like you, and if you like them, and if you want to come back and work at that firm, then I think it could be reasonable. But almost always it's just this, like, people write in with the hypothetical, like, you know, if my attorney offers it. Well, I don't know. Is your attorney seriously talking about that or not? Because I understand that it's pretty time consuming. I mean, 4 years, 18 hours a week sounds like nothing. Honestly, that's like part-time law school. And that would be way better than going to law school, because law school is a total waste of time.
And you're getting paid. You're doing actual work.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to prep for the bar separately from law school anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm all in favor of these programs. I just don't know that they actually are very real. I'd love to be wrong. Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you want to, you know, tell me about your experience actually doing this apprenticeship program. But I've been doing this for a long time, and I still just don't know really anybody who's done it.
Chloe concludes, by the way, I love the LSAT meditation feature. Hope to see more cool features.
Yeah.
That's a cool one.
I think the meditation feature is pretty cool too. I'm glad you enjoy that, Chloe. I think you should continue to study for the LSAT and get yourself, if you think you can get into the 170s, then you should do it. You will open doors to yourself that you just never even imagined. Your coworker who's at Loyola and going to have a $250,000 debt. I don't know that Loyola gives very many full rides. It kind of looks like they don't, actually. So Loyola might not be the best target school for you. But there are other schools in LA that do. I mean, Southwestern gives all kinds of full rides. You can probably get a full ride already at Southwestern with your LSAT in the 160s. But yeah, Loyola, no full tuition scholarships. And 2% are listed as more than full tuition scholarships. I have no idea whether Loyola is a good target school for you. I just know that they don't give that many scholarships.
Teacher Abigail sent this in, and she thought that it might be a good Demon Daily topic.
Yep, it's from Sean, who is a free user of LSATdemon.com, and wrote in to say, Nathan has mentioned multiple times on LSAT Demon Daily that lawyers are masters of the English language. If we're trying to become better at English and its vocabulary, what book suggestion or just suggestions in general should someone take to improve on it? I'm a native English speaker, by the way, but I feel I need to expand my vocabulary and overall understanding of it. And that's coming from Sean. Ben, do you want to recommend a book or a suggestion in general?
Well, Sean, if there's a book that you want to read, that could be helpful. But I think a good way to get good examples of how the English language should be written and used, I would read the New York Times, and I would look up words you don't know. The New York Times is well written, and they use vocabulary all the time that's slightly above the average speaking.
Yeah, I think you need to read, Sean, just read whatever it is that you want to read. The better you get at reading, the more you'll want to read stuff that's well written. And I agree that the New York Times is pretty well written. I like the New Yorker magazine.
I was going to say the New Yorker, yeah, because those are longer form articles, and longer form articles are going to have more words and topics that are higher level than even the newspaper.
But I do want to recommend one book in particular, and it's called The Goddamn Dictionary. The dictionary is your best friend for expanding your vocabulary. I can't tell you how powerful it is. I've had this habit now for, what do you think, Ben, 6 months or something like that, that we've been talking about looking words up?
Sure.
Looking words up is ridiculously good for helping you improve your vocabulary. Because if you're looking up, I mean, if you straight don't know a word, then yeah, absolutely, you need to look it up. But if you think you know a word and then you see it used in any kind of a novel context, that's just the perfect time to look it up and read maybe multiple definitions of the word or the etymology of the word to see where it's actually coming from. That can work wonders for your vocabulary, because it's not just the words you don't know. It's also the words that you kind of know them, but you probably misuse them, or you know them, but you only know them in one context when there are other relevant contexts. So I would encourage you when you're reading and when you're writing to look up words pretty constantly. I was reading, do you know The Expanse, Ben? Have you or the kids watched at all The Expanse? I think it's an Amazon Prime show.
Yep. Yeah, it's about space.
Yeah. So I started reading those books. I'm on like the fourth one now. Okay. And they're kind of like young adult fiction almost. I mean, it's not at all like highfalutin. But I'm a nerd and I like sci-fi stuff. And I've just kind of gotten into these books, and that's fine. You know, they've kept me motivated to keep reading, which is the number one thing. But I look up words there, and I do it on my Kindle. So it's just automatic, you know, click and hold the word and it just pops up definitions for you and Wikipedia. But I looked up last night, I looked up the word maudlin, M-A-U-D-L-I-N, because it was just presented, you know, even though it's like almost young adult fiction, right? But it's still got a word in there used in a way that made me go, oh, interesting, maudlin, huh? Okay. And then realize, well, I've never looked up that word. I don't know. Like, I probably only ever learned that word from context somewhere. And I don't, you know, okay, what is maudlin? I knew it was like hysterical, sort of, right? Like overly sort of like acting, like affected, kind of too much emotion, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And I looked it up and it had this whole thing in there about the etymology of it being related to the Mary Magdalene crying because of Jesus getting crucified.
Yeah.
And so it was like, well, Mary Magdalene is always pictured with these tears, and this word maudlin came from that, like came from this iconography of, and anyway, it's just like,
it gives it texture and meaning that you will impose on it a little bit more than you will. It would, if you never looked it up. Yeah.
I know that word better because of that. I looked that up and saw that one weird fun fact.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we have an email from Uziel. Uziel?
I'd go Uziel, but I'm not sure.
Uziel? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Dear Ben and Nathan, I took the August LSAT and got a 170. Although I'm happy to have the score, I feel I can do better as my practice scores leading up to the official test ranged from 173 to as high as 178. I registered for October. Should I apply now in September with my 170? Even to schools where a 170 is below the 75th or 50th percentile, and in the event of a higher score, allow it to update my application, or apply in November when my score comes back from the October test. Is waiting until the next cycle the best way to go? I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Thanks so much for all your help in my continuing LSAT journey. Sincerely, Uziel. What do you want to say there, Ben?
Well, we get this question a lot, and we get this question a lot around this time. And, you know, it's not uncommon for me to tell people, hey, don't apply to schools in which you're below their 75th percentile with your LSAT score, because you don't want them considering your app until you get that better score. But if you're above their 75th percentile, then hey, I guess you could apply, because going higher is going to help you, but you're already doing so well, at least with your LSAT score at that school, that I'm okay with you applying at that point. The problem I have with that advice that I'm giving people is it muddies the water. Really, what you should be doing is getting your best score on record and then applying early. And I don't even want you considering applications to schools that are subpar. Like, what if you get a full ride to a lower ranked school, you get into a higher ranked school, but now you're tempted by this lower offer because it's your best, well, this lower school because it's your best offer. But if you had just waited until you had this great score and applied early, you could have gotten even better offers. I don't like half in, half out kind of application strategies, even though technically you can apply to these schools because you're above their 75th percentile. I just don't think you should even get involved. I think you should wait until you have your best score and then apply as early in the cycle as you possibly can.
Yeah, when you apply with anything less than your best, and that could be a lower LSAT or a later application, in UZL, you're kind of in a position where you're doing both. I mean, you're already not early, right? We're recording in the middle of September. Scholarships have already started coming out from some schools. So no matter when you apply, you're going to be applying later than we would prefer. And you don't even have your very best LSAT yet. You're going to take it again in October, but you're not sure that you're going to have your best LSAT in October. Lots of shit can happen on the official day. You could have multiple more chances at it if you would slow way down. But if you apply suboptimally, if you apply with not your best LSAT or later in the cycle, you're just setting yourself up to take a bad offer. It's just too tempting to take a bad offer when you do the application the wrong way. It's like you're, I don't know, I need an analogy for it. You're setting yourself up to get trapped.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but it's, you're hedging your bets. And so then you end up, it's just not fully committing. It's not burning your boats.
we'll think of it, but it's a kind of a risky behavior where you're like, well, you know, I mean, I could just throw these applications in now and then retake the LSAT and then get better. And then the problem is I don't think you're ever going to know what your best offers could really have been.
Well, and there's so many things that can happen here too. Like in October, let's say you get a 172 and then you're like, oh great, I got a better score. I'm getting slightly better offers now from some of these schools. But again, what if you had taken it in November and gotten your 178 that you've gotten on a practice test? But you're not giving yourself that opportunity because now you're good enough that you just throw in the towel and call it quits.
Yeah, and if you wait, if you just decide I'm not applying until August of 2023 or whenever the applications open in 2023, if you make that decision now, think about how much less pressure you feel on your October LSAT. You have a chance to retake it in November. I mean, because you're clearly ready. Practice score is 173 to 178. Like, I do think you should take it in October, but I'd love for you to also be able to take it in November. And then you're going to have no stress at all on those two attempts at the test. And then you just apply next August. And by this time next year, you could have scholarship offers in hand, because some people already do right now, mid-September 2022, and people have scholarships from schools they applied to in August.
Yep.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.